okay?
Like out loud?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can pray in Korean so nobody can understand.
Okay.
Except for Sarah.
Okay. Okay, Father God, I just want you to thank you for this time, and I want to thank you for giving Victoria the desire to share what you have done in her life, and I know it takes a lot of courage, but thank you for giving her a desire that overcomes all fear, all anxiety. So I pray that you help her on the stage. I pray that you may speak to her, and that through her you may speak to us, and that we may all be in awe of who you are and what you are doing in each and every one of our lives. So I pray for strength, and I pray that we may open our hearts and be ready to hear what Victoria has to say. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Yeah.
Something I noticed about Shania, I was Facebook stalking, looking for pictures to put up here. Something I noticed that Shania is always in the middle, like she, and she's always pushing Victoria.
I had this like really elaborate PowerPoint set up with cute little baby pictures and some ugly middle school pictures and everything, but it's not working. Hopefully they pull it up, but I'm just gonna talk and
work.
Oh, it's gonna work. Okay. All right. So I'm just gonna talk until they do. Okay, so I guess I'll just start with why I decided to do my testimony. I was in New York this past summer visiting my cousins, and they're not really Christians, so they don't really have God in their lives, and I was just telling my cousin about how different church has made me, and he was really moved by it, and he was like, you know, that's so inspiring, and you should go back and tell that to your church. And so I was like, that's a good idea. And so that's when I went to Howard and I texted him, and he didn't reply. Don't text Howard because he won't reply. And then I decided to write it all out. These are actually the pages that he was talking about, so he was not lying. But anyway, so I was born in New York to a very young mother. She was only 17. She was not looking at all to get pregnant, obviously, and her and my dad were never, like, in love or anything. Like, it was kind of just, what's a church-appropriate way to say it? Like a one-night stand. And then she had me, so it was kind of, like, awkward, but I lived with my mom and my grandma and my aunt and my uncle, so it was the five of us, and we lived in a really bad part of Brooklyn, so I saw a guy get shot when I was 4, and nobody ever believes me when I say that, but, like, I remember it happening, and that's just, like, a representation of, thank you, a representation of how bad the area was, and, But my mom always wanted a better life for me, so she had me take ballet lessons and gymnastics, and overall, like, my mom just wanted me to have a more calm life than she did. And so when I was about 4 or 5, she decided to move us to Georgia because she felt like she wanted me to live in an environment that wasn't so riddled with drugs and gangs and violence. And so that's when we moved here. It was the summer of my first grade year. And we moved in. It was all of us. It was my grandma, my mom, my aunt, my uncle. We all moved into this house really close to here, actually. And it was all of us, and I was really close with my aunt. We were more like sisters. She was 4 years older than me, but we were more like sisters than anything, told her everything. And my grandma and I were really close, too, because she, my mom was always working. And so she was like my second mom. And at that point, I had never been baptized, never gone to church, didn't really have an introduction of God in my life because my family just was never religious. But I was young, so I didn't really know any better. When I moved in with my grandma and my aunt and my uncle, my aunt was about 11 or 12. I was only 6, and my uncle was, I think, 18 or 19. I'm not completely sure. But when we moved in, a couple months after moving in, my uncle started to abuse me sexually. And at first, the first time it happened, I immediately told my aunt, because I tell her everything, and I knew that it was not right because it felt so awful, and she didn't know what to do because she was only 11, so I don't fault her for this, but she told me not to tell anybody. So I just kept it to myself, and I didn't want to question his authority or get in trouble because he, like, threatened me, like, oh, I'm going to hurt you if you tell, so I didn't want to do that, so I just kept it to myself. A lot of the time when it was happening, I blamed myself because I knew that it was wrong. Like, he would bribe me with things, and I would accept it, so I felt like, well, that's your fault because you're letting it happen because you're letting him bribe you. And I was, this whole time it was happening, I was in first grade through about third or fourth grade. A lot of the time, I felt really weak and out of control. I also felt, like, distant from the situation. Like, I knew that it was happening, but I didn't feel like it was happening to me. So then one year when I was in third or fourth grade again, my other uncle came to visit with his two daughters, and they were 13 and 14, and apparently what happened was the uncle who was abusing me tried to abuse them, but they were older, so they knew that it was wrong, and they immediately told, so they called the cops on him, and he got arrested, and it was just a really blurry situation because no one in my family, like, sat me down and told me what was happening, like, oh, he's going away for this, and this is how long he's going to be away. It was kind of just like I had to hear it in bits and pieces from around the family. I think that's a really big thing in communities of color because I feel like a lot of the time we just don't want the family drama to be aired out, so we sweep it under the rug and we don't talk about it. But in the end, it kind of left me feeling like I had to deal with it on my own. Nobody really got me. I was never given counseling, therapy, anything like that. Also, when I was talking to the cops about it, my grandma told me to lie about some aspects of the situation, and so I felt like I was really confused because I thought that I was the victim, but then it made me feel like, well, we're trying to protect him, so I guess I'm not the victim. And I just kind of justified his actions because my grandma wanted to protect him. So there was still no church or God in my life at that point. I just kind of left it alone, and he went away, and so I forgot about it. And when I started middle school, I started going to this Baptist church, and it was with my cousin who lives here, but I always felt out of place there. Like, people there were really judgmental. It was mostly white. If you wore nail polish, they looked at you. If you wore short skirts, they looked at you. Pants, don't wear pants. Just don't even question it. I didn't really get anything from it spiritually. I felt more like I was going, and it was kind of just a burden. Then, when I was in about fourth grade, my grandma bought me this Bible. It was like this really cute Precious Moments Bible, and she was like, we're going to start going to church, and I was like, okay. And so she started taking me to church, but it was a Spanish church, and oh, I'm Puerto Rican, by the way, but they didn't teach me Spanish growing up, so I mostly, I understood it whenever it was used around the house, but I definitely didn't understand it to the level where I could go to church and, like, hear sermons in. So whenever I went, I hated it. It kind of ruined the church for me because I felt like, oh, all the kids there were younger than me. They all were mean to me for no reason. I don't know why. And then we went at like 7 in the morning. We didn't leave until 4. It was just really awful. And also there was a divide between the Hispanics, I mean the Spanish-speaking people and the non-Spanish-speaking people. So whenever they found out that you didn't speak Spanish, there was always that kind of like, oh, you don't speak Spanish, then you're not really Spanish, and there was just always that judgment that I didn't like. And after that, my mom, because we were also living with my grandma at the time, my mom moved out, and she didn't take me with her because I was so young, and she worked crazy hours, so she couldn't take care of me. So she moved out with my little brother's biological father, who's not my father, so we have different dads. But whenever she moved out, she got a more stable job. I moved back in with her, and she got pregnant with my little brother. But her boyfriend, his dad, was abusive, and so we left that situation. He didn't want to be in my little brother's life, so it was kind of like we were done with him. He never, like, hit me or anything, but he was just very quick to anger. And I just hated seeing my mom in that situation, but I'm glad that we got out of it. So we moved back in with my grandma. And at this point, when I moved back in with my grandma, she stopped forcing me to go to church because she realized how much I hated it. And so we moved back in with my grandma. And then my uncle, who was abusing me, actually got out of jail. Again, no one told me anything. I just found him at our house one day. My grandma came into my room, and she was like, oh, look who's home. And it was him, and everybody was so happy, and I was really confused because I was like, I don't feel good about him being around me. But I didn't want to voice that because I don't like conflict. So I just accepted it. I gave him a hug and everything, and so he was still involved in my life. I still had to see him. I'm not sure if that was maybe against, like, whatever was going on legally, but I just kept it to myself, didn't tell my friends because I wasn't sure if he would get in trouble. So about a year after my brother was born, my mom met my stepdad, who is the light of my life. He really showed me that there was still good in the world because he treated my little brother and I like we were his own. He was always giving us advice and making me feel like I could talk to him, and it was just really great. So we moved in with him, which is great. And whenever we moved in with him, I started going to Davidson. And in Davidson, it's mostly, it's 45 white, 40 black, 10 other, of those other, mostly Asian. So I felt like I was either too white, too black, not enough of either. So I always felt very out of place. And when I was there in about seventh grade, I think, I started having really low self-esteem because I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. I came home and I cried every single day. And I really wish that that was an exaggeration, but like I really remember coming home after school and just sitting in my bed and crying because I just hated who I was. And that's when I started to self-harm. And whenever I started doing that, I kept it very private. I didn't tell anyone, didn't tell my friends, family, nothing. I just tried to keep it to myself because I didn't want anybody to think that I was doing it for attention. I definitely didn't want that. And so I just felt friendless and lonely. So in eighth grade, one of my friends who I confided in, she told the guidance counselor about it. And you would think that the guidance counselor would have some comforting words to say, but she just kind of called me in there and was very condescending. She was like, well, you're too smart for this, and I don't know why you're doing this. Like, this is just dumb. You need to do better, blah, 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 blah. It was just really not a good reaction from somebody who was supposed to be a guidance counselor. And so she was like, I'm supposed to call the hospital and send you there, but I think you're too smart for this. I'm going to tell your mom. So she told my mom, and when I got home, her and my stepdad greeted me with, like, a very angry response. They were, like, very confused, and they didn't understand why I was doing it. And I understand that their anger, out of their anger, it came from a place of love. But at the same time, it just wasn't a good reaction because I just felt like they were angry. It didn't feel like I was loved, you know? And the only thing that came from that was I did stop self-harming, but I only did it because my mom would check me, like check my wrists and stuff like that. But I feel like whenever you have a bad habit, the bad habit, just because they go away because somebody forces you to stop, the things that stem from that, like the roots, they don't go away. So the insecurities and all that, they didn't stop. I was still hating myself. I wanted to be white. I like went through this phase where I really wanted to be white, straightened my hair all the time. I tried to be friends with all the white girls at my school. It didn't work. They're really exclusive. And I just went through this really awful friendless phase where I felt like I had nobody. And then in high school, when high school started, freshman year was like, I would say the darkest of my 17 years, probably the darkest year, because when freshman year started, I felt friendless. The first 20 people in my grade tied for 4.0, so that just shows you like how competitive Davidson is. And my grades are not good. Like, I have a B average, and that sounds like it's good, but when you go to Davidson, it's kind of like, wow, you have a B. So I always felt really unintelligent and stupid and lazy. I just belittled myself all the time. And so freshman year, one day I came home and I was just like done. Like, I didn't want to live anymore, and I didn't see it ever getting better. So that night I planned to take my own life, and I wrote notes to people, and it was just a really hard thing to remember because like how dark it was at the time. And like looking back, I know how deeply I wanted to do it, and I know that I would have done it. But when I was, because I set an alarm at 4 in the morning because I didn't want anybody to be up when I did it. But what happened was that night when I went to sleep, I had this very vivid dream that I walked in on my close friend at the time, and she had done it to herself. So I found her, and she was dead. And I woke up like sobbing, and I was like, I just felt so empty because she was such a close friend of mine. And I was like, if anybody feels like a fraction of the pain that I felt seeing my close friend there, then I don't want to put them through that. So that's when I feel like it's kind of a turning point, because I decided I wanted to live. I feel like I wasn't trying to be happy. I just accepted that I was sad and that nothing was going to change that. But at that point, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to try to be happy at least. I don't want to die. And so So I just decided to accept help, and that's when I became friends with Nia and Katie, and I feel like they're kind of the gateway to all the good in my life, because Nia made sure like I had rides, places to hang out with her, Katie, Amanda, and all the juniors. They were upperclassmen, so they kind of just took me under their wing and made me feel really loved and like I had friends, and it was just great. And so then in 10th grade, that was freshman year, so in 10th grade, Katie invited me to AKMC the beginning of my 10th grade, and it was really funny because she posted this picture of me on her Instagram, and it was like a Woman Crush Wednesday picture, it was just a selfie of me, and then like Austin, Robin, Kyung, they all commented like, hello, with little emojis or whatever, and she was like, they want to meet you, and I was like, okay, and so I came, not really for the right reasons, but I came, and, and,
hey, boy.
But I feel like it was good that it happened so casually because I didn't feel so inclined to like come and immediately like live a Christian life and just worship God and everything like that. So I was like, okay, it's casual, like it's cool. And I remember Katie telling me, oh, I was like, oh, what do I wear? She was like, casual or dress up, it doesn't matter. And I was like, ah, she's lying. So I dressed up and I came and I was like, oh, people really do dress casually. And I felt very like, I've always said I felt out of place, but here I never really felt like that, because as soon as I walked in, everybody came up to me, and they were like, hey, what's your name? Like, asking me how, like, who I was, where I went to school, and everything. Like, they were just so kind, and they made me feel very, like, accepted, and at EM, I remember them giving me a cute little mug and welcoming me to the church. I still have my mug. It's so cute. And so I just loved the atmosphere. I never really felt anything like it. I loved the music, and it was just really cool. But I was still really spotty with coming because I didn't really come to grow in my faith. I was just kind of here like, okay, well, if I want to come, I'll come, and if I don't, then I won't. So I just kind of came whenever I wanted to. It wasn't a priority. And when I was in, it was also sophomore year, but it was the end of my sophomore year, I dated my first serious boyfriend. And I think that's where I realized that the abuse that happened when I was younger kind of came back out. And because when we were dating, I kind of let him embody happiness. And I let him do what he wanted because I felt like I wanted to feel loved and valuable. And he made me feel like that. So I just let him pressure me into things that I wasn't okay with. And I gave away a lot of myself, I feel like, that I can't get back. But another thing I want to mention is that a lot of times when you think about relationships where people pressure you, you think it's like very forceful and mean, and it's like a push, but it was more like a pull between me and my first boyfriend. He was like very gentle and convincing and kind, and so that's why I justified it. I felt like it was okay, but I can look back and see that it was not a good relationship. He broke up with me because he didn't like me as much, and it kind of broke me because it was my first serious boyfriend. I thought I loved him, and he was like also one of my best friends at the time, so it was kind of like I had to let go of this really important person in my life, and I stopped eating, I stopped going out, I just laid in bed and cried all the time. I just didn't want to go out into the world, I just wanted to be sad. And so that was over the summer, and that is when my notorious serial dating streak started. And Howard always talks about serial dating, and every time he does, I'm like, that's me. And I feel like he's talking about me. But, and so in 2015, I kind of focused less on faith and more on boys, and I let them kind of embody happiness, and I would just go from boy, just searching for what I felt like Cameron gave me, which is really bad, but like they kind of became like a drug, and I used them to make myself feel happy and myself feel valuable, and I just kept getting hurt. And also my friends, strained relationships with my friends because they would give me advice. I would ask for advice. They would tell me some good advice, and I wouldn't listen. So they would like have to watch me sit there and get my heart broken, and then they would have to pick up the pieces. And like I didn't realize how frustrating that was, and I just kept putting them through that too. So it strained relationships with my friends, and I started lying to my mom, hanging out with boys behind her back. Like it was just a really non-Christian year of my life. And I think what happened was that I started talking to Howard in October, like, so the beginning of my junior year. I started talking to him about my uncle and, like, what happened. He told me that I really needed to forgive my uncle. And I felt like, at first, I was like, no, I don't want to forgive my uncle. He's a bad person. He did a bad thing. Why does he deserve my forgiveness? But when he explained it to me, it made a lot more sense. It's just that whenever you are angry at someone, that bitterness and that anger, it eats you up. And your anger doesn't affect the person who you're angry at. So me being bitter and angry about my uncle abusing me wasn't going to solve anything, because he was still out living his life and I was just sitting there bitter and I was unable to grow and move forward. So I was like, okay, I guess Howard's right. And I decided to try to move on and try to forgive him. So what happened was, I went on the winter retreat and I really didn't want to go. I felt like everyone here was on fire for God and I wasn't. So I just didn't want to feel uncomfortable, but Shania convinced me to go. And when we went, didn't expect much, but what really affected me at that winter retreat was that we had a Q&A session, because at the other churches it was kind of like, just believe what you're told, don't ask questions, don't, if you question it, then you're not a good Christian, like you can't have doubts. And at the Q&A it was like, everything was fair game, we could ask anything we wanted, and nobody made you feel bad about it. And they reminded us, like, it's okay to have doubts, it's okay to be unstable and shaky, but always just come back to God. And so that made me feel very stable and like, okay, then I can be a good Christian if I still have doubts. And also, the prayer night, I've never experienced anything like that. It was just, we were all in a room, and the worship team was playing, and everybody was praying for each other. So people would just come up to you and pray for you, and you would pray for them, and it was just really beautiful. I felt like, I think it was Great I Am. Great I Am is like my favorite song, and it was playing, and I remember the whole retreat, like, are y'all going to play Great I Am? Are y'all going to play Great I Am? And that night, it started playing, and like, I heard it, and I was like, oh my gosh, and I just looked around, and I just felt like the room was just full of love. Like, honestly, I felt like that was what God represented. Like, this is what he, like, AKMC, this is what Christianity is about, this is what Christ is about. And I felt like I just was so surrounded by people who only wanted good for me, and I'd never had that before, so I was I just felt full. And after that, when I decided, like, this is what I want to do. I want to give my life to God, and I want to stop making excuses, and I want to stop with all this messy boy stuff. And so I joined worship team, and I joined Bible study, and I came to church, even when I didn't want to, I came. And a really big thing that I feel like I learned was that God, I mean, the abuse left like a very big hole in my heart, and I kept trying to fill that with boys and like validation from boys that I was loved and worthy, but the only thing that ever made me feel full was God. And I was just really moved by that winter retreat. And so all right, so then in 2016 it was like a new lease on life, and I still kind of searched. I mean, it was kind of hard to quit just looking to my immediate drug for feeling good, which is boys, and so I still kind of struggled with that, but I feel like I did get better about it, because I was still trying to grow in my faith and come to church and look for God for validation. And okay. My handwriting is falling. But anyway, another thing is, after I started coming to church, I have a lot of bad blood with people at my school. And it's because whenever we have arguments or fights, I would kind of just lash out. I wouldn't really think about what I was saying, think about the consequences. I would just lash out with my words, say mean things, and just like always have that tension in the relationship. I wouldn't try to resolve it. And so in 2016, there was this girl in my school, and she was talking about me. And at first, I was like, what does she have to say about me? And so she was just saying really mean like things, and we had never even talked before. So I was like, okay. So I tried to confront her, but it was in a really mean, not super mean, but like kind of mean. It was in like a not nice way. So I like confronted her, basically kind of like, what's good? Like, why are you talking about me? Like, what what's up, like, you know. And she came at me in a nicer way. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, let's be friends, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. But then the next week I heard she was talking about me again. So I was like, what the heck? And I came to my friends and I was like, what do? I want to deal with this in a Christian way. And they were like, but you don't want to let her take advantage of your niceness, because I was saying how I was going to go to her again and apologize even though I had done nothing. And they were like, no, don't let her take advantage of your niceness. So I decided to ask somebody from church. So I talked to Austin, and he gave me this really, really, really great verse and good advice. He was just saying that what makes you Christian is the ability to be nice to your enemies and forgive your enemies and stuff like that. And I was just like, okay. So I came at her again in a really, really sweet way, apologizing for how I came at her the first time and just saying, like, I'm trying to be better, like a better person and stuff like that. And she was just like really moved by that. She said she was also Christian. And so she was like, I'm sorry for everything that I said. Like, I hope you forgive me and stuff like that. And so from that situation, it was like, we're friends now, like me and her. There's not that awkward tension between, because, you know, whenever you have a fight with somebody, it's so awkward because you have to go to school with them the next day and see them and pretend you don't see them. So you're like, it's like everybody knows what happened. So it's just really awkward. I hate that tension. So there was never any of that between us. And it was really great. Like, I make her make CDs now. And it's so cute. Like, we have a cute little friendship. And So when I made her first mix, I, like, gave her this note, like, thanking her for, like, her maturity and kindness through it all and stuff like that. And she wrote me one back, and she gave me this really great verse, and I'm pretty sure it's Proverbs 15:1, and it's, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh answer stirs up anger. Yeah, I had to remember that. I was supposed to get my PowerPoint, but the way it's looking. So I just took that verse, and I was like, this is how I want to always deal with conflict. And so I learned how to better deal with conflict between me and other people and me and my family. I just learned how to do it better. And so also another thing is with my uncle, I learned to forgive him. I never thought that I would, but like I can honestly look back and say like I'm not bitter about it anymore and I'm not angry. I feel like God kind of purified me and cleaned me of all that brokenness, and all I had to do was let him. And a verse that I feel like, well, Sean put this on my filio card. I still have it because it's so cute. And it was this, she said she, well, like, I emailed her asking her for verses. No, I texted her asking her for verses, and she emailed me all of the people's filio cards. And it was funny because, like, the title was, like, verses for filio that I chose specifically for everybody. And I was like, wow. And it really, it was a good verse. It was John 15:3, and it just says, already you are clean because of the word that God has spoken to you. And so that just made me feel, like, very whole, and like I don't, like my uncle did break me, but God fixed me. And so after the retreat, again, learned to forgive my uncle, and I realized that all of my friends, like my close friends, even at school, are Christian. So it was so lovely because, like, you know how there's always that divide between you and your school friends and your church friends because you can't act a certain way around one or the other. Well, I didn't have that because all of my close friends were also trying to grow in their faith, and it was just really great. Another thing is, I talked to Howard about, like, what love is. I found this poem that I wrote, and he was like, well, it sounds like you're just searching for love, but you have the wrong definition of it. And so he redefined love for me, and, like, I realized that love isn't going to save me or fix me, and just because I find somebody else romantically, it's not going to make me whole. And he was just saying that that idea was written by a world who thinks in lust, appetites, and passion. And so it really helped me because I felt scared for whenever I do start dating again in the far, far future. It made me scared because, like, my first boyfriend, it was so easy for him to end it because he just didn't feel that way anymore. And he was just, and when Howard told me that, it just reminded me that, I think it's 1 Corinthians, not sure which, 13:1. Through something, and it's like love, I don't know, but it says love never fails, and it tells you what true love is. It's just commitment, passion, I mean, commitment, safety, and supportive. And so when he redefined that, it made me feel like, okay, so the world's not over. I can still find a romantic love, and it won't end, and it'll work out, like, in the far, far future. But, and so, okay, oh, yeah. So, sorry. So, in May also, because, I mean, throughout the year, I wasn't always on fire for God, so in May and April-ish, I kind of got distant from church, and I just felt far away from God, and I kind of just let it happen because I just didn't work hard to, like, get it back, and so I stopped coming to church for a couple weeks, and, like, I just started hanging out with school friends who were kind of not good influences, and I just whatever about it. But then, when summer started, like, that first weekend of summer, sounds really bad, but I had a boy over. But listen, he only came over because he was giving me food, which was so nice, right? He didn't actually come inside. He was just giving me food. But no one was home, so my neighbors saw, and they told my mom. And my mom, she had me when she was 17, so she's always been kind of strict on me when it comes to boys. And she was, like, so mad about it. Like, I've never seen my mother so upset. I didn't understand why at first, but looking back, obviously, like, she just wants the best for me, and she doesn't know the boy. She never met him. So she took all of my technology, no laptop, no phone, no Nintendo DS. Because I love my Nintendo DS, you know? And I got all my stuff taken. Couldn't go out with my friends. I had to stay inside. I was just, like, a prisoner in my room, and I was like, oh, my goodness. And I cried, and I felt so alone, but at the end of the day, like, I realized, who did I go back to? And it was God. And, like, I started praying, I started reading the Bible, I started wanting to come back to church, even though I couldn't because I was on lockdown. And I just started realizing that on the winter retreat, they taught us that whenever something bad happens in your life, sometimes God makes bad things happen to bring you back to Him, and I felt like this was one of those moments. So even though it sucked not having my technology, it also made me realize that I rely on my phone, social media, and all of that too much, and so taking that away just brought me back to what really matters, which is God. And there's this verse, and it's in Job. Is it Job or Job? Not really sure. Job. I had it right. Okay. What are you going to say? Job. Okay. So Job, and it's like Job 2:10. He's talking to his wife. And I think Job is that story where the devil and God make a deal, and Satan's like, oh, he's going to run away from you. You've just given him everything. If I take it away, like, he won't be good to you. And he was good to, I mean, okay, anyway, I'm getting off track. I'm sorry. But in the end, like, Job was talking to his wife, and he was like, shall we accept good from God but not trouble? And that verse always brings me back to whenever something bad happens in my life, I try not to blame God anymore. I try to take it from it and learn from it and ask for a purpose as to why it's happening. Like, with the whole getting my stuff taken away, I looked for purpose, and I felt like it was to bring me back to Him, and it did. And church also helped me realize, like, that I'm talented. Going to Davidson for 3 years when you are not into fine arts that much, don't recommend it. Because I ended up taking ceramics, which is like pottery. But it's like probably the least known fine art at Davidson. So I took ceramics in 9th grade. You have to take 3 years of a fine art to have a credit for it at Davidson. So I was like, okay, ceramics is going to be my fine art because I'm not good at anything else. But I wasn't good at ceramics either. So, like, for 3 years, I just wasted my time in ceramics, like, beating myself up, feeling like I'm not good at anything, and, like, I just hated it. So church also, like, it helped me realize, like, I have other talents. Like, I like writing and singing. Sorry. I like writing and singing, and it just made me feel like, hey, I can use that to worship God. And, yes, so also, got some sticky notes here. All right, need more other sticky notes. Okay, also, there were this is test, and it's like your spiritual gift test, and I was like, ooh, because, you know, everybody's always interested in those little tests that you can take, and it tells you about your personality, because everybody cares about themselves, it's really cute. And so I took it, and I was like, ooh, what are my spiritual gifts? And at first it was like mercy and intuition. It's the one that's like intuition. I'm not sure what it's called. But I was like, I don't want to be merciful because I felt like if you're merciful, like, you feel things too much, because I feel like I feel things too much and I feel them too hard. So I always thought that was a curse, but when I took that test, I was like, and I started actually coming to church and, like, giving my life to God, I realized that it's such a gift to feel, because I can help other people through that. And I just accepted that, and I started accepting things that were wrong with me and learning to love them too. And, like, with the whole insecure thing when I was in middle school, like, going to church and everything kind of helped that, because I felt more content with myself, because I knew that no matter what, like, God was going to love me. And So I stopped putting my validation in boy, I put him in God. I feel like church obviously rerouted the course of my life. I don't think it would be going so well without church. And I have a better relationship with my friends and my family. And I have a lot of sticky notes. I got it. So I feel like I wrote down what I wanted to say at the end, because I was like, this is nice. So Psalm 23, the first line of it is like, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. And that's probably like my favorite verse ever, because it just grounded me and made me feel like no matter what, I will never lack anything, because I always have God. And he just makes me feel whole and loved. And so I feel like throughout my entire life, through all the tragedies and the hurt, the abuse and everything that's happened with my family, he has always been there. He's guided me and watched over me and picked me up when I fell down, even if I didn't realize that he was there. I kind of compare it to like a Snapchat streak. Like, we're always so obsessed with keeping our streaks, but I always break my streak with God, but he never breaks it with me. And I feel like that's something I need to work on, is keeping our streak and not just going on Sundays, but also involving him in my life 24/7. It just makes me feel so full of love, because he will never forget about me, and he's always so loving, and he knows me, and he knows what I've done wrong, and he still loves me for it. And that's just something that I'm so happy about. Also, there's this song, and I'm not sure what it's called. I'm so sorry. I'm really upset, because I was listening to it this morning. But there's this lyric, and also, when I was in trouble with my mom, sorry, for the prayer night. So the night of the prayer night, because I had been in my room, locked up, doing nothing, cleaning all day, just sitting like in my room doing nothing. She came into my room that morning, the day they had prayer night back in like June, I think. She was like, get up. And I was like, she want. And so she took me to this nail salon, and she was getting her nails done. She let me get my eyebrows done, and I was like, yay, because, you know, like, I've been cooped up in my room for 8 years, so they're a little bushy. And when we came out, she was like, do you feel like you've learned your lesson? And I was like, yes. Yes, I have. I promise. And she was like, okay, well, you know, I only do it because I love you, and I just want the best for you and stuff like that. It was just really sweet. And she did a complete 180. Like, it went from her being mad at me to the next day, okay, you can have your stuff back. We're going to work on trust. And I was like, can I go to church? And she was like, yeah, you can go to church. And so I was able to go to church, and I really felt like God was moving the mountain that is my mother. not that she's fat. Like, no. So good thing she's not here. But I just felt like, 'cause my mom is a very stubborn woman. Like, she is set in her ways, set in her mindset. Like, I felt like I was going to be grounded for life. So in that month that I was without my things, like, and I was praying about it, and I felt like, is God listening? He was, because she was like, you can go to church, you can have all your stuff back, and you can even go to New York, because she wasn't going to let me go to New York to visit my cousins every summer. Well, I visit them every summer with my dad, so she wasn't going to let me go this summer, but she let me go. And I was like, that is such a great thing, thanks God. And so overall, church has just really helped me be a better person, and I'm just really blessed with all of my friends, family, and everybody who's helped me out throughout the way, and Howard, even though he doesn't text back. I just feel like church has made me better, and I felt moved to share that with you guys, because I know that Most people don't volunteer to do their testimonies, but I just really wanted to share mine with you in case you were ever, like, feeling down, like, see how God has... I have a lot of papers here. God has moved me, and hopefully it'll move you too, and that's it.